you and I are being made as amazing stones built into the house of the Lord, even this morning as we gather. That's what you are, and what we are together. So I want to share a few things, having that as our context, if you will, the environment that we're in, about this woman who was healed on the Sabbath day in the synagogue. And it reminded me, as I was, I don't know why, but it did, it reminded me a bit of a song that I've yet to share with you. Dave Turrell and I have written a few songs, and there's some that we haven't used anywhere yet. Looking forward to doing it. But there's one in particular. It's called We Walk This Way For You. We Live This Way For You, whatever it is. And I sent it off to Damon and said, what do you think? And he added something. See, I was writing about what it is to follow Jesus, to walk every day, follow Jesus, and that's why we do the things we do. And he put in a verse referencing throngs of saints and sinners. Well, that's fine. I mean, I'm a sinner. I'm guessing you are too. And that's, so it generally fits, but it wasn't the direction I was going in. So I just stopped, and instead of saying, oh, whoa, Dave, hey, wait a minute here, what are you doing? I just stepped back and thought, listening, what is that? And what it struck me as we were thinking about that and working on the song, that there is nothing outside of the love and mercy of God. There is not a circle of his love for which there are things outside of it. There is not a circle of his mercy in which something is outside of his mercy. His reach goes further than we know or can imagine. And that's what we see here today in this woman who was healed on the Sabbath day. That's what we see Jesus doing all the time. There is nothing in our lives that is beyond the touch of the mercy of God. And you and I, you don't have to admit this openly or anything, but you and I may have thoughts, memories, attitudes, things going on inside right now that we don't want anybody, especially God, to know about at this moment. But even that is not beyond the touch of his mercy, the transformation of his love. The darkest place in our hearts is not beyond that. Whatever that may be for you. Probably what just came to mind is what it is for you. That is not beyond the touch of the mercy of God, just as this woman was. So what we have here in this story, this incident, is Jesus showing up at a synagogue, and he's invited to teach. And as you may recall from other times when this happened, that is always a recipe for disaster. It's just, I don't recall an incident where that just went smoothly with Jesus. You invite him up to teach, and everyone says, well, that was wonderful. Can you come back again? None of that happened. In fact, the worst, as you may recall, was his hometown where he was raised. Everybody knew him, and they wanted to throw him off the cliff. They took him outside, took the edge of the cliff. They were going to throw him off. You remember that? Good. Some of you do. Excellent. Hopefully the rest of you will after this too. Right? But that's what happened. God bless you, Menji. So here he is. He's teaching and in the synagogue, and everyone's there, and the rulers of the synagogue are watching. And in the back is a woman, as we saw, who had been bent over by a disabling spirit for 18 years. Could not stand up straight for 18 years. And she's in the back. Now, the reason that she's in the back is probably because she is in some form or another an outcast in that culture. You know, she's unable to make a living, and most women were at that time in that particular section. And she would have been a drain on somebody or other, and really thought that perhaps she had sinned in some particular way, or her parents had sinned in some awful way, and now she is reaping the results of that sin. All those kinds of things were in that culture. So Jesus interrupts the teaching. I mean, I don't know what seminary he went to, but he interrupted the teaching. Calls this woman who is an outcast to come forward, you know, from the margins to come forward. And here she is front and center in front of everyone, having the focused attention of the guest preacher for the day in the middle of the highlight of their week, which is the synagogue service. And he declares her healing. I want you to notice he didn't pray. Didn't pray. He just declared it. Woman, you are healed. I'm very tempted to go off on why that happened, but some other time. Why he declared instead of prayed. All right, I'll tell you a little bit. It's because... because it is the Father's will that healing comes. He didn't pray, Father, it be your will. I mean, how many of you actually believe that maybe it's not God's will to heal some people? Why people are not healed is a different question. But if you actually believe it's not God's will to heal some people, why in the world would you encourage that person to go to the doctor and have the doctor go against God's will if it's not God's will to heal somebody? Well, okay, that's enough of that. So Jesus, bringing the kingdom, bringing signs to the kingdom. Here's why it doesn't happen sometimes. Because the kingdom is not evenly experienced before the return of Christ. You will recall, it's been a little while since I shared this with you, the way World War II ended, D-Day. The Allies land on Normandy. The Germans and the Axis powers know that it is over. But VE Day was not until the following May, 11 months. And from D-Day to VE Day was the most vicious, with the highest amount of casualties going on in the warfare of that time. The Day of the Resurrection, all satanic forces know it's over. But between that day and the day of the return of Jesus, they don't give up easy. That's why the kingdom is not uniformly experienced. Same thing. But it is God's will that the kingdom come and His will be done. That's why Jesus declared, instead of prayed, if it be your will. So she straightens up. This is great. This is great. You know, they're all praising God, applauding, all kinds of non-Episcopalian things that we like to do from time to time. Except for the synagogue leader. Did you notice that? The synagogue ruler says, hey, you can't do that today. It's the Sabbath. What's wrong with you? Listen, any of you who are sick, you want to have prayer for healing, you come back some other day, but not on the Sabbath day. You can't do that. Jesus gives him this rationale for why he did it. Did anyone understand that? Listen, Mr. Synagogue ruler, you take your animals to get water on the Sabbath, right? Does anybody get the connection? You do? What is it? Yeah. God is in charge, yeah, but that still, so why does he tell the synagogue ruler, you got a horse, you got an animal, and you lead him to water on the Sabbath? Does anybody get that connection? You do, Stacy. Well, it's work, but Jesus offered that as a rebuttal to what the synagogue ruler said. Somebody else was saying... Oh. Yeah, okay. Bill, what do you... Compassion to the animals, doing the same thing as it work. Bobby. It's life. Well, it's life, yeah. That's right. You're going to be stuck with a dead animal. That's right. Or God's ruling, yeah. Yeah, for your animals. Well, okay. Yeah, excellent, excellent thoughts, excellent answers. Let me add one more into that, all these which are true that you just mentioned. You may recall last Christmas Eve. I'm going to remind you just in case you don't. It was colder indeed, yes. Days weren't quite as long, all that. Lower humidity, everything, right? Described where a manger would have been. And because we think in Christmas Eve, no room in the inn. Well, the inn was the guest room in somebody's house, not a separate, Motel 6 down the road. It was something, it was a guest room in somebody's house. So the house would have been approximately from here back to the sink or so. And, from here to the first window, maybe would have been the guest room, the main room. And then the main living area would have been from that window maybe to the double door over there. And everyone would have slept there as well as ate and played Pokemon Go or whatever they would have done in that time. And then just beyond that, there would have been a wall halfway up. And that on top of that wall would have been the manger. And the animals would have been just on the other side of that wall, eating from the manger. But they're in the house. It's open. And there's two reasons for that. One is that it helped keep the house warm when it was really cold. A desert night can go below freezing. And also, it kept the animals from being stolen, which is a very important economic backbone of that society. So if your animal was stolen, you'd be cold at night plus poor. As time went on. So they brought him inside. Now, keep that in mind. Here's Jesus is saying to the synagogue ruler, you would untie your animal and lead him to water on the Sabbath. But you don't let this daughter of Abraham be healed on the Sabbath. And you would think that the synagogue ruler would have had an excellent answer to that. And they were silent. Everyone was silent. They were put to shame, it says. Why is that? To lead an animal from your house to the source of water was less than in the distance it took to break the Sabbath. It was within the regulations of the Sabbath. They had a source of water a very short distance from the house so that they would not violate the Sabbath watering their animals. So he would have untied the animal from the manger, led it on over to the barrel or whatever they had, and never broken the Sabbath. And Jesus says, you free and untie your animals and lead them to water. I have just freed and untied a daughter of Abraham from bondage. How much more is she worth that freedom than the animal? There's ways for the freedom of God to be expressed and released on the Sabbath, and I just did one of them. That's why they were put to shame. Now, we have all this biblical study, exegesis, whatever you want to call it, looking at stuff at the dictionary. What about the Sabbath? What about on time? All this and that. What does that mean for us today? It means this. The woman was freed by engaging God in worship. She was freed by engaging God in worship. When she showed up at worship, there was God. she engaged God and something happened in her life. Something really good. The same works for us. The very same works for us. There may be something in our lives, or there may not be, like this woman who had a disability and was kind of an outcast and thinking, well, I don't fit in, something's not right, or whatever, and you engage God in worship and are set free from that. That's what happens here. That's what happens every time. That's the purpose for coming. That's the thing that we do. That is where we live, you might say. That is a very different kind of approach than what is kind of unspoken in the air throughout a lot of Christianity, particularly Western Christianity. And I'm not immune to it. No one I know is. And it's this. I'll go to that church if, or I'll keep going to that church if, I like, you can start filling in the blank, the music, the teaching, the people, the program, the building, the fellowship, the potluck, you know, whatever. If I like it, if I don't like it, I am free to choose something else. Well, yes, you are. The challenge is that that is not the purpose for which a church is founded or established or continue. The purpose is to engage with God. The preparation that we have to come to Sunday morning worship or any other times of worship is to be prepared to engage with the Spirit of God. The whole point is to engage with the Spirit of God, to know that you have met the living God once again at that time. If the sound system blows up, the songs are completely out of tune and not going right, the sermon is incomprehensible, whatever, you don't like anybody else there, didn't bring your favorite cookies to the potluck, you name it, if any of that happens and you engage the living God, you have met what God desires of a fellowship on a Sunday morning. Now, I'm not asking for permission to be incomprehensible or have everything else go wrong. I'm saying those things are not the point. The point is that you have seen him high and lifted up, and the touch of his hand has touched your life, and the things that you desire to receive from God, you have begun receiving, and the forgiveness you need to receive, you have received, and the direction you need to know, you have begun to know, and the things that build you up, you have received from the hand of God every time. So what you do is you come to give him honor and praise and sacrifice and offering. You come to give that to him. You come so that your whole life, your whole heart, your whole soul, your whole mind, your whole strength is given to Jesus every single time we come together. And looking for what he would give us is important, but second to all of that. When that happens, as it has happened among you and me here, you've been engaged living God, you start hearing the voice of God. You start picking up on what he starts telling you. You start thinking, this is what I want to do because God is moving me to do that. You start looking out the window and saying, God's tapping me on the shoulder, right? All kinds of things happen like that. And that is why you come here. You come to this room at this time with these people who worship in this way so that you can engage the living God every time. So here's what I want to invite you to do. If in your own heart there is any strain which says the church should be the things I like, that you would repent of that, turn from that as your primary reason from being a consumer of religious goods and services, and turn towards offering everything of your life to God every time. That's where you receive what He has for you. And then, in the extremely rare case that anything happens in worship that is a mistake, that you ask God to empower you from this table to walk in the steps of Jesus and follow after Him in the way He desires every day of this following week until the next time you come. Now, this is what I think will start happening. You will find yourself becoming a more attractive Christian. I mean, there's certainly people who look at you now and say, well, you know, there's something about you. You go more deeply into that, and there'll be people saying, there's more things about you. Or more people will see more about you because of the light of Christ that is shining in you, because you have sacrificed your desires for His and brought them into your life. What will also happen is that your clarity of catching what God is giving to you, sending your way, saying or telling you, will increase. Doesn't mean you won't have to listen real hard. Just the clarity of it will increase. You'll begin to know, this is what God is prompting me for. Those things will happen when you turn from looking for what you want to looking for what He wants. So I commit myself with you to do that for the glory of His name from this point on. Would you please stand? Lord Jesus, we thank You for all that You have done and that You've drawn us here. We ask that the sacrifice of praise and thanksgiving would touch Your heart and please You today in every way, and that we'll be formed and shaped to be more like You all the days of our life. Amen.